treasure. Party boys number one, Franklin W. Dixon. Chapter 1-1 is the demon Frank, but Joe Hardy clutched the grips of their motorcycles and stared in horror at the oncoming car. It was careening from side to side on a narrow road. He hit us. We'd better climb this hillside. But fast, Frank exclaimed, as the boys brought their motorcycles to a screeching halt and leaped off on a double. Joe cried out as they started up the steep embankment. To their amazement, the reckless driver suddenly pulled his car hard to the right and turned into a side road on two wheels. The boys expected the car to turn over, but it held a dusty ground and sped off out of sight. "Wow," said Joe, "let's get away from here before the crazy guy comes back. That's a dead end road, you know." Two of the boys scrambled back onto their motorcycles, but gunned them a bit to get past the intersecting road in a hurry. They rode in silence for a while, gazing at the scene ahead. On a right-hand embankment of tumbled rocks and boulders sloped steeply to the water below. From the opposite side rose a jagged cliff. The little traveled road was winding, but just wide enough for two cars to pass. "Boy, I hate to fall off the edge of this road," Frank remarked. "It's a 100-foot drop." "That's right," Joe agreed. "We'd sure be smashed to bits before we ever got to the bottom." Then he smiled. "Watch your step, Frank, or Dad's papers won't get delivered." Frank reached into his jacket pocket to be sure several important legal papers, which he was to deliver for Mr. Hardy, were still there. Relieved to find them, Frank chuckled and said, "After the help we gave Dad on his latest case, he ought to set up the firm of Hardy and Sons." "Why not?" Joe replied with a broad grin. "Isn't he one of the most famous private detectives in the country? And aren't we right to then becoming serious?" He added, "I wish we could solve the mystery on our own, though." Frank and Joe, students at Bayport High, were combining business with pleasure this Saturday morning by doing the errand for their father. Even though one boy was dark and the other three fair, there was a marked resemblance between the two brothers. 18-year-old Frank was tall and dark. Joe, a year younger, was blonde with blue eyes. They were the only children of Ben and Primary city in 50,000 inhabitants, located on Barnett Bay, 3 miles inland from the Atlantic Ocean. The two motorcycles whipped along the narrow road that skirted the bay and left a little girl, the brother's destination. The boys took the next curve neatly and started up the long, steep slope. Here the road was a mere ribbon and badly get to the top of the hill, it won't be so rough, Frank remarked, as they jumped over the uneven surface. Better road from there into Willowville. Just then, above the sharp foot of their own motors, the two boys heard the roar of a car approaching from their rear at great speed. They took a moment to glance back. Looks like that same guy we saw before. Joe burst out, "Good night." That was a hearty stop to pull as close to the edge as they dared. Frank and Joe hopped off and stood poised to leap out of danger again if necessary. The car hurtled toward them like a shot. Just when it seemed as if it could not miss them, TH4 driver swung the wheel about viciously in descent and sped past. "Phew, that was close," Frank asked. The car had been traveling at such high speed that the boys had been unable to get a license number or a glimpse of the driver's features. But they had noted that he was hatless and had a shock of red hair. "If I ever meet him again," Joe muttered, I'll. The boy was too excited to finish his threat. Frank relaxed. He must be practicing for some kind of race, he remarked, as the dark blue sedan disappeared from sight around the curving head. The boys resumed their journey. By the 10:05 they rounded the curve and could see Willowville in a valley along the bay beneath them. There was no trace of the rash motorist. "He's probably halfway across the state by this time," Joe remarked. "Unless he's in jail or over a cliff," Frank added. The boys reached Willowville and Frank delivered the legal papers to a lawyer while Joe guarded the motorcycles. When his brother returned, Joe suggested, "How about taking the other road back to Bayport? I don't crave going over that bumpy stretch again. 6 suits me. We could stop off at Chet Morton, who was a school chum of the Hardy Boys, lived on a farm about a mile out of Bayport. The pride of Chet's life was a bright yellow jalopy which he had named Queen. He worked Tanu Daily to Super the Edge. Frank and Joe retraced their trip for a few miles, then turned onto a country road which led to the main highway, on which a wooden farm was situated. As they neared Chet's home, Frank suddenly brought his motorcycle to stop and peer down into a clump of bushes in a deep ditch at the side of the road. Joe, that crazy driver or somebody else had a crack up. Among the tall bushes was an overturned blue sedan. The car was a total wreck, and lay wheels upward, a mass of tangled junk. We'd better see if there's anyone underneath, Joe cried out. The boys made their way down the culvert, their hearts pounding. What would they find? A close look into the sedan and in the immediate vicinity proved that there was no victim around. Maybe this happened some time ago, said Joe, and Frank stepped forward and laid his hand on the exposed edge. Joe, it's still warm, he said. The accident occurred a short while ago. No, Sam, I'm sure this is the Red Air driver's car. But what about him? Joe asked. Is he alive? Did somebody rescue him, or what happened? Frank shrugged. One thing I can tell you, either he or somebody has removed the license plate to avoid identification. The brothers were completely puzzled by the whole affair, since their assistance was not needed at this spot. They climbed out of the culvert and back onto their motorcycles. Before long they were in sight of the Morton's home, a rambling old farmhouse with an apple orchard at the rear. When they drove up the lane they saw Chet at the barnyard gate. Hi, fella, Joe called. Chet hurried down the lane to meet them. He was a plump boy who loved to eat and was rarely without an apple or a pocket of cookies. His round, freckled face usually wore a smile, but today the hearty sensed something was wrong. As they brought their motorcycles to a stop, they noticed that their chum's cheery expression was missing. What's the matter? Frank asked. I'm in trouble, Chet replied. You're just in time to help me. Did you meet a fellow driving the Queen? Frank and Joe looked at each other blankly. Your car? No, we haven't seen it, said Joe. What's happened? It's been stolen. It's stolen. Yes, I just came out to the garage to get it clean, but she was gone, Chet answered mournfully. doesn't occur a lot. That's a strange part of it. She was locked, although the garage door was open. I can't see how anyone got away with it. A professional job, Frank commented. Auto thieves always carry scores of keys with them. Chet, have you any idea when this happened? Not more than 15 minutes ago, because that's when I came home with a car. We're wasting time, Joe cried out. Let's chase that thief. But I don't know which way he went, Chet protested. We didn't leave him, so he must have gone in the other direction, Frank reasoned. Climb on behind me, Chet, Joe urged. The queen can't go as fast as our motorcycles. We'll catch her in no time. But there was only a little gas in my car anyway, Chet said excitedly as he swung himself onto Joe's motorcycle. Maybe it had stalled by this time. In a few moments the boys were tearing down the road in pursuit of the automobile thief. 9 chapter 2, the hold of Chet Morton's jalopy was such a brilliant yellow that the boys were confident it would not be difficult to pick up the trail of the auto thief. The queen's pretty well known around Bayport, Frank remarked. We should meet someone who saw it. Seems strange to me, said Joe. The thief would take a car like that. Auto thieves usually take cars of a standard make and color. They're easier to get rid of. It's possible, Frank suggested, that the thief didn't steal a car to sell it. Maybe, for some reason, he was making a fast getaway and he'll abandon it. Look, Chet exclaimed, pointing to a drug garden where several men were hoeing cabbage plants. Maybe they saw the queen. I'll ask them, Frank offered, and brought his motorcycle to a stop. Then he scrambled over the fence and jumped across the rows of small plants until he reached the first farm hand. Did you see a yellow jalopy go by here within the past hour? Frank asked him. The lanky old farmer leaned on his open, put his hand to one ear. Hey, he shouted. Did you see a fellow pass along here in a bright yellow car? Frank repeated in a louder tone. The farmer called to his companions. As they ambled over, the old man removed a plug of tobacco from the pocket of his overalls and took a hearty chew. Latir wants to know if we saw a jalopy come by, he said slowly. The other three farmhands, all rather elderly men, did not answer at once. Instead, they laid down their hoses. The plug of tobacco was duly passed around the group. Frank grit his teeth. Please hurry up and answer. The car was stolen. We're trying to find the thief. That's so, said one of the men. A hot rod, hey? Yes, a bright yellow one, Frank replied. Another of the workers removed his hat and mopped his brow. Seems to me, he drawled, I did see a car come by here a while ago. A yellow car? No. Pointy yeller. Come to think of it, I guess 11 anyhow. It was a delivery truck, if I remember rightly. Frank's throat to conceal his impatience. Please, did any of you? Was it a brand new car, real shiny? Asked the fourth member of the group. No, it was an old car, but it was painted bright yellow, Frank explained. My nephew had one of them things, the farmer remarked. Never thought they was safe myself. I don't agree with you. Still another man spoke up. All boys like cars, and you might as well let a man one day to work on themselves. You're all wrong, the deaf man interrupted. Let the boys work on a farm truck. That way they won't get into mischief. He gave a cackling sort of laugh. Well, son, I guess we ain't been much help to you. Hope you find the critter that stole your hot rod. Thanks, said Frank, and joined the other boys. No luck, let's go. As they approached Bayport, the trio saw a girl walking along the road ahead of them. When the cyclist drew nearer, Frank's face lighted up, for he had recognized Callie Shaw, who was in his class at Bayport High. Frank often dated Callie and liked her better than any girl he knew. The boys brought their motorcycles to a stop well beside pretty brown-eyed Callie. Under one arm she was carrying a slightly battered package. She looked vexed. Hi, Callie, what's the matter? Frank asked. You look as if your last friend had gone off in a moon rocket. Callie gave a mischievous smile. How could I think that with you three friends showing up? Or are you about to take off? Then her smile faded and she held out the damaged package. Look at that, she exclaimed. It's your fault, Jed Morton. This town boy gulped. Am I my fault? How do you figure that? Well, dear old Mrs. Wills down her road is ill, so I paid this is Will's Joe Rogan. Callie, I'm feeling terribly ill. Callie, ignore him. That man in the car came along here so fast that I jumped to this side of the road to drop my package. I'm afraid my cake is ruined. What man? Joe asked. The one Chad lent his car to. Callie, that's the man we're looking for. Frank exclaimed. Chad didn't lend him the car. He stole it. Oh, said Callie, shocked. Chad, that's a shame. Was he heading for Bayport? Joe asked 13, yes, and at his speed he was making the Parkley travel. You never catch him. Chad groaned. I just remembered that the gas gauge wasn't working. I guess the car had more gas in it than I thought. No telling where that guy may take my queen. We'd better go to police headquarters, Frank suggested. Callie, will you describe this man? All I saw, she answered, was a blur. But the man did have red hair. Red hair. Frank fairly shouted. Joe, do you think he could be the same man we saw? The one who wrecked his own car. Joe wagged his head. Miracles do happen. Maybe he wasn't hurt very much, but walked to Chet's house and helped himself to my car. Chad added, Frank snapped his fingers. Say, maybe the wrecked car didn't belong to that fellow. You mean he stole it too? Joe interrupted. Yes, which would make him even more desperate to get away. Whatever are you boys talking about? Callie asked. I'll phone you tonight and tell you, Frank promised. Got to dash now. The boys waved goodbye to Callie and hurried into town. They went at once to Chief Ezra College, head of the Bayport Police Force. He was a tall, 14 husky man, well known to Van Duvardy and his two sons. The chief had often turned to the private detective for help in solving particularly difficult cases. When the boys went into his office, they found the police chief talking with three excited men. One of these was Icarity, the old ticket seller at the city ferry boat office. Another was policeman Con Riley. The third was Oscar Smuff, a short, stout man. He was invariably seen wearing a checkered suit and a soft felt hat. He called himself a private detective and was working hard to earn a place on the Bayport police force. Smuff's playing up to college again.